It's Wednesday, November 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President-elect Donald Trump continues to form his cabinet as President Obama visits Greece.
The new administration of Mr. Trump will be much more friendly, or much friendlier, and therefore there may be new opportunities for Israeli policy in the Middle East.
Israel is anxious to begin relations with the Trump administration. Also ahead, North Korea offers its opinion of the new president and the musical vibrations of spider webs. It's all on today's International Edition. Protests against the election of Donald Trump continue as the U.S. president-elect forms his cabinet. The protests include many people who did not vote at all. Nearly 1,000 high school students from Washington, D.C. and surrounding areas walked out of their schools and marched across the city Tuesday in protest of President-elect Trump. Students told VOA a human rights club at Woodrow Wilson High School informed students through social media and emailed parents with their intent to organize a walkout and a march through the city on Tuesday. Although hundreds of these students could not vote, they wanted to make their opinions on the president-elect and their concerns for their own futures clear. President Barack Obama, meanwhile, is in Athens, Greece, on his last foreign trip as president. Mr. Obama says NATO is absolutely vital as he seeks to reassure Europe about the U.S. commitment to the alliance under the presidency of Donald Trump. Following up on issues raised by President-elect Trump and by previous U.S. administrations, including Obama's, the U.S. leader called on NATO members to spend more on defense. The president also offered a partial assessment as to why Americans chose Donald Trump.
With technology combined with social media and constant information have disrupted people's lives, sometimes in very concrete ways. A manufacturing plant closes and suddenly an entire town no longer has what was the primary source of employment. But also psychologically, people are less certain of their national identities or their place in the world. It starts looking different and disorienting. And there is no doubt that that has produced populist movements, both from the left and the right, in many countries in Europe. When you see a Donald Trump and a Bernie Sanders, very unconventional candidates, have considerable success, then obviously there's something there that's being tapped into.
In New York, President-elect Donald Trump and Vice President-elect Mike Pence are meeting about key appointments in their new government, with aides signaling that former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani could be named Secretary of State. Trump and Pence have more than 4,000 jobs to fill in the U.S. government as they prepare to assume power January 20th, but their immediate focus is on filling the top diplomatic post and that of Defense Secretary, Attorney General, and Homeland Security Chief. All are positions that present the government's face to the world and help lead the country's fight against terrorism. International Edition host Ira Melman and VOA national correspondent Jim Malone explore the cabinet selection process.
It seems as though what's one of the factors driving the possible selections here is loyalty to Donald Trump during the campaign. That's not unusual in our history that presidents want to appoint people they're comfortable with. Though we should point out there was an excessive amount of vitriol within the Republican Party as Trump rose through the ranks. Are you with him, against him? And people who have associated with Trump from his business career note that he's very big on loyalty, and those who are seen as disloyal, generally aren't welcome in the inner circle. So let's see how this plays out. I mean, this is still informed speculation about who's going to be what. I noticed that another member of the transition team has left, a former Congressman Mike Rogers of Michigan, who has a lot of experience in the intelligence area, and some people had considered him a possibility for, intelligence chief. you know, whether that has to do with this loyalty thing to Trump, I don't know. But there seems to be some elements of sort of turmoil emanating from the transition at this point.
And just to open that up even a bit more, I mean, some of the reports have said that it's almost like hand fighting in that Trump organization.
Right. But I mean, look, he was an outsider and he took on the Republican establishment, never mind Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. And now the tone we're getting from the Republican congressional leaders is deferential to him. They all want to work together. We just heard a little while ago from House Speaker Paul Ryan. So the congressional wing seems to be mobilizing to carry out what Trump wants to do. They still have a ways to go, though, in sorting out who's going to be in the administration and the cabinet. And the names that will come forward will speak not only to Trump's desire to deliver on his promises to his base supporters, but what kind of tone will it set as he tries also to try to heal the country that even President Obama said yesterday was an important aspect of what he needs to do.
But you got to realize there are thousands of jobs that are up for grabs here. Is that correct?
Sure. And it's going to take a while. I mean, they're going to focus on the big ones first, and the rest will follow. But, you know, we've already seen with Reince Priebus coming in, chief of staff, sort of a nod to the establishment. But Stephen Bannon, this controversial figure from Breitbart, as his key political counselor, that again shows that desire to maintain links with those who were most loyal to him during the campaign.
There have been reports that Donald Trump might be seeking some top security clearance for his eldest children. Any confirmation of that? And why would he want to do that anyway?
Well, I mean, again, he has relied on a small inner circle, and the children were a key part of that. I don't know where that goes. I don't know what the ethics questions that might be raised in connection with that. Not only that, what about the ethics questions raised in connection with his various business holdings?
Who the children, the very children, the reports say he wants high security clearance for, will be running that business.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're in uncharted territory to a degree, so how this plays out. Sometimes there are not hard and fast laws or rules about how some of this plays out, so it's going to take a while to sort it all out.
VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. One name probably not being floated for the Trump cabinet is Barbie, although many a young girl had Barbie in her cabinet or toy chest over the years. It's time for us now to check out what people are saying on the web. And as always, International Edition's social media reporter G. Abby Lee is here in the studio. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
So let me guess, what do you have?
So you are definitely right. Barbie has been an important cabinet member for many girls growing up, myself included. And Tuesday was a good day for plus-size women or anyone who support diversity in that area. I don't know if you know her name, but Ashley Graham is actually one of the most famous plus-size models in America. And now there's a Barbie doll version that looks just like her. She's on Twitter at TheAshleyGraham. Graham and the brand Barbie both tweeted about the new doll, and apparently she requested that the Barbie's thighs touch. And this is what she tweeted Tuesday afternoon. Thighs touching, round hips, arms, and tummy. Thank you at Mattel and at Barbie for immortalizing me into plastic. Hashtag beauty beyond size.
Wow. So what's the online reaction like?
So the dominant sentiment is that many women are happy. There is a version of Barbie that shows plus-size women are beautiful because in many parts of the world, the plastic doll is considered to be the gold standard for conventional beauty, with long blonde hair, skinny legs, big bust, and pearly whites. Some people are also tweeting to petition for Ashley Graham Barbie to become available for purchase because there are only two for now. But there are people who are unhappy with the plus-size model trend. One mother tweeted, "The new doll should be named a cardiovascular disease Barbie, harsh, and that her daughter will not be playing with it." She also said she is sick and tired of the political correctness.
Okay, well, what else happens to be trending online?
A dating app called Tinder. We're covering all spectrum here
yes,
today.
We are.
The company introduced features to make it more transgender and gender fluid user friendly. Now, one such feature is allowing users to select genders outside the binary, which means women or men, and giving them the option to identify themselves as a transgender person. Tinder used hashtag all types, all swipes to announce a change, and GLAAD, which is a media monitoring organization, also tweeted it's been working with Tinder for the past 6 months to make the change happen. Jim?
Thank you so much, G. You can follow our program's account on Twitter at @VOA_IE. G and myself are also out there on our individual accounts, which you are free to follow at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, Pakistan and China jointly open new international trade route. India confident of strategic partnership under Trump. North Korean diplomat on Trump election, we do not care. Thailand begins trial in 2015 shrine bombing. Amidst protests, tense times for Chinese Indonesians. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app for smartphones. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Israel's Minister of Education said Monday Donald Trump's election as U.S. president offers a chance to reset the structure across the Middle East. Naftali Bennett, leader of the Jewish Home Party, told the Foreign Press Association in Jerusalem the combination of changes in the United States, in Europe, and the region provide Israel with a unique opportunity to reset and rethink everything. Bennett declined to be specific on what actions the Israeli government should take, but after the Trump victory, he is quoted as saying the election result is a tremendous opportunity for Israel to immediately announce its intention to renege on the idea of establishing Palestine in the heart of the country. He went on to say the era of the Palestinian state is over. His comments came as the U.S. State Department condemned an effort to legalize an unauthorized Jewish settlement on private Palestinian land in the West Bank. Regional analyst Joseph Olmert of the University of South Carolina tells VOA's Victor Beatty it's simply too early to judge what a Trump administration will do in the Middle East.
This is not the first time that this particular minister makes statements that are either miscalculated or utterly wrong. I would imagine that this statement reflects the sense among elements in the Israeli cabinet that the current administration of President Obama was not as friendly to Israel as was supposed to be, and that the new administration of Mr. Trump will be much more friendly or much friendlier. And therefore, there may be new opportunities for Israeli policy in the Middle East. What I would say is that on the surface, it seems that the Trump administration could be more friendly to Israel on certain issues, and possibly could be less friendly on other issues. And the jury is still out about two key issues here. One of them is what really is the emphasis or weight that Mr. Trump will put on the Middle East in his overall foreign policy, which is not so clear. The second point is, in case he does engage himself extensively in Middle East policies, is it really realistic on the part of Mr. Bennett or any other of his colleagues to believe that an active American Middle East policy will not include an attempt to bring about a solution to the Israeli-Palestinian situation? So I think it's therefore too early to speculate, and what Mr. Bennett said was sheer speculation, and we leave it at that. You know, speculation is what it is.
Mr. Trump is on record during the campaign of advocating moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Nobody believes it in Israel. It will not happen. I wish it was happening. It should happen. Hopefully, one day it would happen. But if I'm not wrong, one of his Middle East advisors, Mr. Walid Faris, whom I, by the way, know personally, just said in the BBC a couple of days ago that this is not going to happen. I never heard a denial from any of Mr. Trump's people. Maybe Mr. Faris was not entitled to make the statement. Maybe he didn't get enough traction, so it didn't bring about a reaction. Look, if it happens, it will be great. You ask me if it can happen, it can happen. Will it happen? I doubt it very, very much.
Joseph Olmert said Mr. Trump's campaign rhetoric has suggested a less interventionist foreign policy, but he does expect less acrimony toward Israel than what was characterized during the last few years of the Obama administration. North Korea's state media initially praised Donald Trump during his presidential campaign, but following Trump's victory, A senior official expressed indifference about the incoming president. Kim Jong-ho, the North Korean Foreign Ministry's director of the Division of Human Rights and Humanitarian Issues, told reporters at the United Nations that the fundamental issue is whether or not the United States has the political will to withdraw its hostile policy towards the DPRK. North Korea urged Trump to help unify the peninsula by removing troops. The United States has long said it will never accept a nuclear-armed North Korea and has imposed multiple rounds of strict sanctions over Pyongyang's pursuit of nuclear technology. Borrowing costs for governments across the world have increased sharply since Trump's election, as investors believe the new president's policies will speed the pace of interest rate rises. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, emerging economies have been hardest hit, with fears growing that existing trade deals could be torn up.
Many emerging markets are reliant on cheap exports, and much of it is sold to the United States. It is in these countries that the biggest economic shocks have been felt from the political earthquake in Washington, says analyst David Rees of Capital Economics.
Effectively, we've seen investors pulling out of emerging markets. Basically, the Trump victory has hit risk appetite, given his fairly vitriolic approach to emerging markets and free trade. And investors have basically taken a flight to safety.
That has meant a major sell-off of risky emerging market debt and currencies, which have seen big losses against the US dollar. If the sell-off continues, the economic pain will start to be felt by ordinary citizens.
You're going to get lower economic growth, lower jobs growth, wage growth, etc., potentially higher interest rates for debt service, and if currencies are falling and inflation pressures are building.
Those pressures have forced up bond yields, the interest rate governments have to pay to borrow money, and not only in emerging markets. In Italy, bond yields hit an 18-month high as the global upward trend was compounded by the political uncertainty over an upcoming referendum. That could hit Europe's nascent recovery, says Michael Hewson of CMC Markets.
I think there is a concern that if bond yields start to edge even higher from where they are now, we could actually see a little bit of a squeeze on borrowing costs on those areas of the European economy in particular that can least afford it.
Mexico's borrowing costs have hit five-year highs following Donald Trump's victory, given his pledge to build a wall on the border and deport millions of illegal immigrants. But Rees says it is unlikely the world will see a return to the so-called credit crunch that followed the 2008 financial crisis.
Obviously, Mexico's quite a special case in terms of its close relationship with the US and Trump's, you know, particular focus. Elsewhere, yields are still relatively low at the moment, so we're not running into kind of credit crunch situation.
Analysts say investors have been reassured by Trump's conciliatory tone since the election, but they predict heavy market losses if he follows through on campaign pledges to tear up global trade deals. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You'll find much more on our website at voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palkov.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA. A leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. Spider webs have something in common with guitar strings. Both can vibrate, much like the strings of a strum guitar. Spider silk transmits vibrations across a range of frequencies, and the quivering gives the spider information on prey and potential mates. VOA's Deborah Bullock has more.
Scientists at the University of Oxford have shown how spiders control the tension and stiffness of their webs to optimize their sensing powers. Tiny tremors, which spread throughout the web, let the spider know if there is a possible mate, or perhaps something to eat.
Spiders use vibrations not only from prey, which is caught in their web, where obviously it's important that they know not only that something's hit their web, but where it is and what it might be. But vibrations are also important in courtship. So a lot of males will actually generate very specific kind of a musical pattern, which the females can use to determine not only that they're a male, but that they're the right species and whether she might want to mate with them as well. But on top of that, spiders also generate their own vibrations to assess the kind of condition of their web as well.
The researchers came up with the findings after sending measured laser pulses into the silk strands of a garden cross spider. They used a special laser to measure the minute vibrations which spread through the web.
We were able to input our own vibration into the web, move this vibration around to different locations, work out how the spider is able to locate where vibration sources are coming from and how the vibrations change as they move through the web structure.
Computer models show how a spider can change the wave vibration amplitude of its web by adjusting the tension and stiffness of the silk. The research indicates that spiders have a special ability to shape the physical properties of their self-made materials and architectures. The scientists think that spider silk may have evolved for this purpose.
They are constantly able to kind of monitor the tensioning on their webs by they can kind of feel around with their legs. So they have a behavior where they kind of bounce on their webs slightly and sometimes they pluck the silk fibers as well. So they're able to kind of send out a vibratory signal into the web and they can monitor what comes back.
The information could help mechanical engineers better understand how structures respond to energy and how vibrations affect a building's integrity. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com. For Director Tracy Carter and Engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Last month, two newly elected pro-independence lawmakers in Hong Kong, Sixtus Leung and Yao Wai-ching, changed the language of their oaths of office. The Legislative Council barred them from assuming their seats. Hong Kong's judiciary took up the matter to decide whether the two would be able to retake their oaths and assume their office. Before the Hong Kong court handed down a decision, China's top legislative body issued an interpretation of the basic law that in practical terms said no second chance would be allowed. The matter is still with the Hong Kong judiciary. China resumed the exercise of sovereignty over Hong Kong in 1997 under the One Country, Two Systems framework enshrined in the basic law, which vests in Hong Kong executive, legislative, and independent judicial power, and also protects the rights and freedoms of the residents of Hong Kong, including freedom of speech and association. Regarding the recent developments relating to Hong Kong's Legislative Council, Deputy State Department spokesperson Mark Toner said the United States is disappointed.
The United States strongly supports and values Hong Kong's Legislative Council and independent judiciary, two institutions that play a critically important role in promoting and protecting the special administrative region's high degree of autonomy under the basic law and the One Country, Two Systems framework that have been in place since 1997.
We urge the Chinese and Hong Kong Special Administrative Region governments and all elected politicians in Hong Kong to refrain from any actions that fuel concerns or undermine confidence in the One Country, Two Systems principle, said Mr. Toner. Hong Kong's prosperity and stability depend on the successful implementation as provided for by the Joint Declaration and Basic Law. We believe that an open society with the highest possible degree of autonomy and governance by the rule of law is essential for Hong Kong's continued stability and prosperity as a special administrative region of the People's Republic of China.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.